Welcome to the CSIS podcast. I'm Colm Quinn. This week we look at North Korea. We're only about 3 months into 2016 and we've already seen a nuclear test, ballistic missile tests and most recently a string of missile launches that have landed out to sea. This behaviour has led to tougher sanctions being placed on the country as well as an increase in the already high tensions on the Korean Peninsula. To help us understand what's going on in North Korea is Victor Cha, former deputy head of the six-party talks with North Korea and now our Korea chair at CSIS. Joining us by phone, we hear from Victor on what these latest missile launches mean.
So I think we can never look at these missile demonstrations in a vacuum. And there could be several possible explanations. First, we always look at the particulars of what they did, and based on the press reports, it looks as though they launched a ballistic missile from a road mobile launcher from the west coast of the peninsula east into the East Sea or the Sea of Japan. And that's significant not so much because because of the Nodong missile, because they've launched that before, but the fact that they did it from a road mobile missile with probably a specific target in mind, which means that they're working on their accuracy and their range. So I think that's the technicalities of it are important. In the broader political context, I think this is falling in a train of events that are building towards the 7th Party Congress in May. And what I mean by that is since January, we've seen the regime, in terms of both their rhetoric and their action, building a narrative of strength with missile tests and nuclear tests and other things as they seek to celebrate the consolidation of this young leader's rule in May in the 7th Party Congress. So I think these missile tests were a part of that demonstration of strength in terms of not just the military capability, but also in response to the exercises and in the need to show that he is consolidating his power as we go to the May Party Congress.
Yeah, we can talk about the exercise in a second. I want to go back to the idea of North Korea and their show of strength. Do we have an idea of what that strength even is?
I think we're very much in the dark. I mean, what we see snippets of things like purges, on-the-spot guidance, pictures that the official propaganda release, and we speculate as to whether that's a sign of strength or a sign of weakness. I mean, the fact that he's purged nearly 100 high-level officials could, on the one hand, be interpreted as a sign of strength, that he is moving out the people who are disloyal, or it could be seen as a sign of weakness, which is that he's unable to get people to do what he wants. And there's some resistance in the system, and that's why he's pushing them out. So as often is the case when we talk about palace politics in North Korea, we're very much in the dark. And when we see little sparks, whether it's purges or things of that nature, we're not sure if that's a fire that's happening on the inside. We don't know if it's the smoke before a fire, or we don't know if it's a fire, or we don't know if it's smoke after the fire has been extinguished. That's the challenge of trying to deal with such an opaque target.
And one of the things, one of the kind of surprising things that came out February was that the U.S., you know, had been hoping to enter negotiations with North Korea. Obviously, that was scuttled shortly after. But what does that say about the U.S. Willingness in wanting to open this communication?
So it's definitely not in U.S. interest for the situation on the peninsula to escalate. And I think the Obama administration has always been interested in trying to have some sort of dialogue with North Korea. The problem right now is that the North Korean terms for dialogue are really unacceptable because they don't want to talk about denuclearization anymore, which has been the essential purpose of the dialogue for not just the United States, but for South Korea, Japan, China, Russia, and others. That has been the basic purpose of the dialogue for the past 30 years, and North Korea doesn't want to do that anymore. So I do think dialogue is important. I think it's important to maintain dialogue, particularly in periods of time when tensions are escalating, as they are now, in terms of missile tests and nuclear tests and military exercises, things of this nature. But the challenge still remains. There's a big gap between what would allow the United States to come back to diplomacy from what would allow North Korea to come back to diplomacy. And that gap is about as wide as it's ever been.
You've been at the table with North Korea. What would it take for them to get to the table? Is it other countries pressuring? Is it some sort of concessions? Is there even a hint of some sort of light on the horizon?
So I think the main instrument right now that the world is trying to use to get the North Koreans to come back to the table are the sanctions. The UN Security Council sanctions, the US sanctions, the South Korean sanctions, Chinese compliance with those sanctions, since many elements of the new UN Security Council resolution pertain in particular to China's economic interaction with North Korea. So, you know, contrary to popular wisdom, you know, the purpose of these sanctions are as they seek to cut off, you know, financial transactions with North Korea. The purpose of this is not to collapse the regime. The purpose of it is to try to squeeze them enough so that they are forced to come back to the negotiation table. So I think that's where the focus is right now. The challenge, though, is, you know, when we go back to the negotiation table, if we do, if China, for example, complies with the sanctions, puts enough pressure on the North, they come back to the talks, there's still a huge gap in terms of what we can talk about, because we, meaning the United States, the Western community, want to talk about their nuclear weapons, and they don't want to talk about that. All they want to talk about is a peace treaty that recognizes them as a de jure nuclear weapon state.
And how important is China to all this? Obviously, they're trying to assert themselves in the region elsewhere. Is this a point where the U.S. and China can actually have a lot deeper cooperation?
On paper, it should be. On paper, you know, on paper, the United States and China may have conflicting interests in the South China Sea. We may have conflicting interests with regard to the Taiwan Straits. But on paper, there's no conflict here. Both the United States and China don't want to see nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula. However, what's true on paper is not necessarily true in practice. And the problem there is that China has always had to balance between wanting to put enough pressure on North Korea to get them to denuclearize, but not putting so much pressure on them that they can cause the regime to collapse. So I think what we're seeing now is that China has agreed to these sanctions. They're very important sanctions. They're at a much higher level than before. They will have to comply with these sanctions because, again, much of it pertains to their activity with North Korea. But at the same time that they're doing that, you can bet your bottom dollar that they're putting lots of pressure on the United States behind the scenes to go back to talks, to be willing to talk to North Korea about peace treaty, you know, about, you know, a full-on discussion that is, that does not necessarily privilege nuclear weapons at the top as the sole and only issue. And so that creates all sorts of challenges for the United States, because I think, you know, nobody wants a war on the peninsula, and they don't want the current tensions to lead in a bad direction. Everybody wants some sort of exit ramp, but the exit ramp that the Chinese are willing to put forward is not the one that we want to take.
And south of the parallel in Republic of Korea and South Korea, what's the feeling there? Obviously, the military exercises are going on right now. What's the feeling in South Korea with this kind of increasingly or almost regularly erratic behavior by North Korea?
I think there's a lot of worry that they're in a new paradigm, if you will. Their decision to close down the Kaesong Industrial Complex, the Inter-Korean Economic Project, was a big decision. And I think there's real concern that North Korea really, you cannot roll back their nuclear weapons, at least under the current leadership. So, you know, I think there has always been concern about the North Korean threat, and they've been dealing it for since the end of the Korean War. But I think with what's happened since January, there's been a substantive change in the level of concern, and that it's not simply a leadership that is misunderstood, and that there are potential solutions for. I think there's more of a concern now that this is actually quite menacing. It's quite dangerous, and that the issue is not simply talking to them. I mean, that has often been sort of the default response to any crisis is, oh, we should just talk to them and this crisis will subside. The North Koreans under Kim Jong-un don't want to talk, and they clearly want to have a modern nuclear arsenal. And so that's, I think, a big concern now in South Korea.
And that was Victor Cha, bringing us to the end of our show. We'll be back with more soon. So until then, thanks for listening.